Blog Talk Radio.
Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Hello and welcome to the Reasonable Voices Blog Talk Radio Show, where politics is honest and art is politically poignant. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, most ably assisted by our technician and chief, Bernard Hankins. And today our guests are Andrea Miller and Frank Anderson. Now, Andrea, we all know, we've talked with Andrea before. She ran for Congress in 2008. She is the co-chair of Progressive Democrats of Virginia. And what again is your position, Andrea, with the National PDA?
I am the deputy field director, and I'm also the one of the leaders of our en masse criminalization team and also our Equal Rights Amendment three-state strategy team.
Fantastic. Now, the last time we had Andrea on, we talked about ERA, but today we're talking about the restoration of rights. And by the way, hello, Andrea, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Marcello. Hello to you, too.
Thank you. And our second guest, I actually met through Andrea a few years ago, is Frank Anderson, who he's on the show because of his background. He's seen everything from every point of view on the issues we're discussing today. Frank now lives in Northern Virginia and is a graduate of George Mason, and I'm going to let the rest of his history come out as we talk. Welcome, Frank. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having me, Marcello.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I just wanted to remind people, you know how doctors like a baseline when we go in, they take your blood. Well, today the audience is the baseline, and I'm going to, give over some blood so we know where we started. We're in the Commonwealth of Virginia, which is one of four states, I believe, that do not automatically restore civil rights, including voting rights, to people who paid their debt to society. In other words, you commit a crime, you do the time, you come out, and you still are not an American citizen, even though you paid your debt to society. But lately, just in just the last 30 days or so, Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli in Virginia, who is running to be the next governor, said he suddenly had a change of heart, and he thinks that the rights of former nonviolent felons should be restored. And within a week, Governor Bob McDonald had also an epiphany, and he also said he's reversing his position. And I don't want to claim this is an exact quote, but it's very close. Governor Bob McDonald of Virginia said that he would automatically restore on an individual basis the civil rights to nonviolent felons. So that's where we are. What is a felony? What is not a felony? What's violent? What is not violent? Is what we're going to talk about today, because Andrea and Frank know what's going on behind the scenes. So that's where we are. That's our baseline. First of all, correct me if I'm wrong, Frank and Andrea. If a state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, says that you committed a violent crime as opposed to a nonviolent crime, then it's a whole different process. And if you've committed a violent crime, according to the state, you're not even eligible for this reversal of position on the part of the governor and the Attorney General. Is that true?
Can
yes,
I jump in first with that?
Sure.
We need to back up a little bit, Marcello. Virginia is one of four states where you lose your right to vote for a lifetime. It's not just that you're not automatically restored. This is you lose it for your lifetime unless individually restored by the governor. So that really is our baseline. And what Governor Bob promised in his press release and news conference was that there would be some kind of automatic, however, with individual review for nonviolent offenders. So I just wanted to add that tiny little, actually really big correction. Frank,
absolutely.
Hop
appreciate
in.
It.
Right.
Frank.
So that's where we're at right now. But if we want to look at the evolution of the process, it's never quite what it seems because the, like you said, the definition of violent and nonviolent keeps on changing. And right now, by saying nonviolent felons, they're already so far excluding some folks from the picture, possibly more than they're planning to include.
Maybe we should mention why you have a special a right to your opinions here. Frank Anderson actually served 2 years and 2 months for nonviolent burglary, and I think I met you during the time when the Governor McDonald was saying there was no real requirement. You didn't have to, you know, he wasn't sending out a letter with his list of requirements, including things like you had to go to church and prove you'd, you know, this kind of citizen and that kind of citizen. And then the next thing I know, that a letter shows up on the Rachel Maddow show. So let's give everyone that context. Now, you, Frank, received one of those letters. Am I correct?
No, I did not receive that letter, but I was active in trying to persuade them to change the process. And this was one of the first major developments under the McDonald administration. So they had said, yes, we're going to make it even harder for people to apply to get your rights restored, and they issued that letter. But that was a public relations nightmare for McDonald administration. And so they decided to reverse course a little bit, and that's when they decided to make the application a little bit easier and to speed up the processing time and also to speed up the time it would take to reapply if you got turned down the first time, which was what happened to me.
And when you were turned down the first time, what was the explanation?
Well, they gave me, they said two things. First of all, they said, we never tell you why we turn you down. That's made in secret. That's a secret decision. And then they went on to say that they turned me down because I had traffic tickets on my record.
Yes.
Well, that was when I decided to go public with this new information because that was previously a secret requirement, and eventually the governor's office overturned that policy.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcello, so, we're actually talking about two different governors. It was Governor Tim Kaine who originally turned down Frank's request. It was Governor Bob McDonnell that eventually restored Frank's voting rights.
Okay. Well,
that's right,
a good
and
thing.
It did take a little while.
Yes, now,
yes, and I do applaud
talk
for doing that.
Talk to us about some of the hoops you had to jump through to get your civil rights back as an American citizen.
Well, the first thing that you have to do is just know that there is a process. And as you know, there's thousands of Virginians who may be eligible to apply, but they don't even know that there's a process. You're just told that your rights are denied forever unless the governor can change it. So first you have to know that there's an application, and it took me a while to even know about it. But then the application itself, depending on what your offense was, could be from 2 to 12 pages long. Now, fortunately, I was under the nonviolent category, so I just had the shorter application. But even then you have to get the felony sentencing order and find out the exact date that you were sentenced, the court you were sentenced under, and the date that you were released from probation or parole, and confirm that you had paid off all your court fines, and then get it notarized and turn it into the governor's office. After that, you have to wait. You just wait for them to respond. And at first it took them a long time to respond.
Are they any faster now? Again, talking about that time period. between you going through this process twice with two different governors and prior to this new reversal on Governor Bob McDonnell's part, publicly anyway, during that time?
Right. Under Kane, they did restore a lot of people's rights, and but the application process was a little bit longer. And again, so when I applied the first time, it took a few months, at least 3 or 4 months for them to respond. And then, again, under the McDonnell administration, it did take them a while until they changed the policy to process them within 60 days. But that's 60 days from the time that they're ready to start looking at your application, not from the time that you deliver it.
Okay. Do they provide even an online sort of website where one can go and get the information, or did you have to figure that all out by yourself?
Well, fortunately, I had been involved in Virginia politics and had been registering voters, because even though I was not allowed to vote, I was able to register other voters and convince them to vote, and that kind of made up for it. And in the process of working with other activists, I learned about this restoration of rights application process. So there is a website. There is an official website. It's commonwealth.virginia.gov. And that's where you could find that information.
Now, jumping to the present day, after the Cuccinelli and McDonald announcement to automatically restore on an individual basis civil rights to nonviolent felons, something, the reversal, okay, let's say that's a sincere thing and that's really happening. What's behind it, Andrea? What's underneath? I know it's a political year, election year, but is this on the up and up, or are we working some angles back there, or am I just fishing too much?
Well, it's really interesting that you mention that, Marcello, because, well, number one, the governor actually modified the process in 2010. So that meant he was aware of the problem. He was aware that between 350 and 400,000 Virginians are impacted by this rule that says people with felony convictions in their past must have their civil rights restored by the governor. So his knowledge of the extent of the problem and his ability to resolve the problem have always been there. So the question is, why now? And then when we look at what has been delivered so far as opposed to what has been hinted at, it's not really the same thing. Automatic, by its very notion, has really caused a lot of people to believe that their civil rights are just going to be restored. And unfortunately, that isn't true. There is still a process where they're basically going to have to notify the governor that they want to get their rights back. And because the governor is changing the process in midstream, as it were, and nobody exactly knows what the process is, it doesn't currently exist. So if you previously applied prior to May 29th, when the governor made his announcement, then basically you are subject to the old process. The new process doesn't really go into effect until July 15th. And at this point, a lot of things are up in the air, including and most troubling, what is a nonviolent felony versus what is a violent felony. They are at this point looking at making many offenses that had historically always been classified as nonviolent suddenly violent. So that means fewer and fewer people are going to be eligible for this automatic restoration by individual review which, if they're individually reviewing it, that basically says it can't really be automatic. Now, can it?
It's not automatic. I'm glad to hear you bring up that point, because I wanted to go to that as people are talking about the state, that is, under Governor Bob McDonald and Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, the Commonwealth of Virginia has put out this, dangling the carrot to ex-offenders, saying you are going to be automatically given back your rights as an American citizen if you have, understandably, paid your debt to society. You have fulfilled your sentence requirements. You have paid your fines to the court, etc. Then bingo, automatically. But we have to individually examine. And in the meantime, at the same time, they are choosing another list or altering the list of what is a violent felony and what is a nonviolent felony. And Frank, do you know anything about what might be moving around from one side of that list to the other?
Yes, I do. Now, it's important to remember that before they did any of this moving around, the list was already, it didn't make sense as far as what's violent or nonviolent. Because originally, the violent category included drug distribution and many other nonviolent offenses. So, and it's unclear where that list initially came from, but that's the way the process was in the beginning. But now they took four additional offenses from the nonviolent category and put them into the violent category, and one of them was burglary, the one for which I was convicted. So it was burglary, statutory burglary, breaking and entering, and possession of burglarious tools. Now, that final one is just, let's say you get caught with a crowbar. Well, that would put you in the violent category, and as a result, you would only be eligible to apply using the 12-page application, where you have to get three letters of reference, certified copies of your sentencing order, certified proof of payment of fines, write a personal letter to the governor, and also convince your parole department to write a letter to Richmond on your behalf.
Oh, well, plus there's a 5-year wait to even be able to apply.
Yes. So I don't know why they were doing this, but I think they just wanted to make it easier for themselves, perhaps, to have few people to worry about.
I was talking to some folks down in Petersburg, and one of the questions that I asked was, what are the most common crimes in Petersburg? And I was frankly expecting that they were going to come back and say something related to drugs. And the answer was burglary.
Okay, so burglary is not a violent crime unless you harm someone in some way, physically. Is that
well, at that point, that then it's yes. another crime. It's not burglary. It's something else. Election fraud also in Virginia is classified as a violent crime.
Oh, my God.
Right. So there are items on the list that have absolutely nothing to do with any type of assault on another human being.
Mm-hmm. And as Frank was saying, even though that was sort of twisted, if I can go that far, before, now that the list is being revised on what is violent as opposed to what is nonviolent, it's even getting more out of whack, and even fewer people of the 400,000 plus are able to get where Frank is, right?
Correct, and it's going to, and it's gotten even more confusing. Now, on the one hand, we have people assuming that their rights have been restored because the governor said it was automatic. We have other people believing that they're going to get some magic letter on July 15th, and now on top of everything else, crimes that have historically been classified as nonviolent for purposes of getting your rights restored are suddenly going to be in the violent category. So if you happen to not get your paperwork in time, in time, you could have committed the exact same crime on the exact same date, been convicted, had the same sentence as another person, and yet now you have a totally different process to get your rights restored. That's not fair.
And we also have a situation where the number of people that he could automatically restore could be outnumbered by the people he's excluding from the process and making it even harder than before to get the rights restored. Nearly impossible.
And this he we're talking about is Governor McDonald.
Correct.
Yes, okay. All right, so if I sound a little confused by this, I might be, but I've looked at this, read about this, I've had other interviews about it, and every time I'm in a discussion with folks like you two, who know more about it than most, my head just spins. So we are, it seems that the state governor has held out an automatic promise, although with that dangling on an individual basis right away, I thought, well, what does that mean? How can it be automatic if you're going to review everyone individually? But in addition to that, the more serious thing is, it seems to me, you're saying to us, is that they're changing what was considered a nonviolent felony to a violent felony, and therefore fewer people are eligible to even receive this. And Frank, I hope it's not, I mean, this would be the better reason, just because it saves them time and paperwork. It would be far worse if there were other reasons for it. But either way, are we just playing games with people whose lives are out there trying to change, like yours, Frank, for instance? I mean, you're now married, you have a daughter, you live in Northern Virginia, which is not bad, and you're also the executive director of the Fairfax County Democratic Committee. You offer free assistance to those seeking to have their rights restored. I mean, you are an upstanding citizen, like Andrea Miller is. What sort of hope is there for the people who, like you, would like to turn things around? And is it just a maze that we keep bumping into? I know there's a question in there somewhere. I hope you could answer for me. I'm not certain. I guess the bottom line is what I'm asking are two things. Number one, who do we talk to do something about it? And number two, how do we get the audience, the public, to know where do you get your information from that they're changing the list, revising the list of nonviolent and violent felonies? How do we know they're really doing that? How do we find out, and who do we call to make them stop? What do we do?
Well, I find out just by looking at the website, the commonwealth.virginia.gov website, and I noticed that they had the press release up there with a new announcement from May 29th. But then I looked at the list, and yes, it was different than it was before. And it just kind of speaks to the fact that this whole process is arbitrary and capricious. And what we really need is a constitutional amendment that would just make it automatic for everybody, which, to his credit, Governor McDonald supports now. And he made that decision this year. But if people want to do something about it now, we need to take advantage of this opportunity persuade the governor to follow through with what he said he would do. So I think that contacting the Commonwealth, the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office, talking to the media, talking to your friends, and things like what you're doing, Mr. Marcello, is the best, our best angle right now.
Mm-hmm. I think also we should make it clear that while Virginia is one of four states that does not automatically restore full citizenship to former felons, nonviolent felons, there are a lot of states that do. Is that right, Andrea?
Yes, and there are two states in New England where you never lose your right to vote. And so when people are running for office, the local jails and prisons are on the campaign trail. You never lose your right to vote. Frank, do you remember, is it Maine and Vermont? It's definitely two New England states.
Yes, Maine and Vermont.
So we are sort of in Virginia and the other three states lagging behind. I think Kentucky is one of the four as well.
Iowa, and Florida.
Yes. Okay, I'm not going to. My point is, I think, is that we are, I guess, behind the times is a little trite to say, but Frank made a good point. We need a constitutional amendment, and we really are talking about the Virginia Constitution, which has had
yes.
very few updates by any other name since its original document. It has had a few amendments, but very few, and I think the last was I can't remember offhand, but I think the Constitution itself goes back to pre-Civil War, and then there was an 1870 revision. In other words, it's time to take a look at it again, as Frank is saying. And I wonder if we're missing anything that we have not discussed, Andrea. You're good at that.
I wanted to say
there was a time there that Frank lived in Washington, D.C., because that's where I was going with that, because Washington, D.C. was one of the places in the nation that has no restrictions on voting rights. But since we do have four states that make that extremely difficult, what else might we be telling the public? Because I think if the public really gets it, we're not talking about murderers, we're not talking about rapists, we're talking about people who made a mistake, who we always say this, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty, if you do the crime, you do the time, you pay your debt to society, and then, you know, it should be, now you have a chance. That's the whole point. You've done what you paid for what you did. Now we give you that chance to come back and be an American citizen, but that isn't really true, and it seems to be that it's made, as Frank has said, it's been made more difficult. They're moving the football goal line. But you jump in, Andrea. You were going to say something. I'm sorry.
One of the things I was going to say is in Virginia, we have very, very some bizarre things that are felonies. In Virginia, if you are convicted of stealing or embezzling, as little as $200. Now, again, remember, this is the 21st century. $200. That is a felony. In Virginia, if you have more than 500 tires on your property without a permit, that is a felony. Right. I mean, that is a felony for which, if convicted, you will lose your right to vote for a lifetime. And also remember, Virginia is a three-strike state. If you are convicted of three misdemeanors,
yeah.
You also are now guilty of a felony, at which point you lose your right to vote. And that's really critical that, again, people understand we are not talking about people convicted of horrible crimes against other human beings or humanity. We're talking about people who were guilty of bad judgment at some point in their lives in many instances. Is that really worth losing your right to vote for a lifetime?
And even though voting rights are at the top of our list, it really isn't the only right you lose. There are other rights that you lose.
You can't run for office. You can't be a notary public. You can't sit on a jury.
There you go. So basically, you really are a second-class citizen. Frank, you know, I'm going to go to a quick break now, but when we come back, I'd like you to tell us what it was like to feel like a second-class citizen. What I mean, That's a movie in itself. But right now we're going to take just a quick break. Everybody stick with us. We're talking to Andrea Miller and Frank Anderson about the restoration of rights of nonviolent felons and the evolution or revision of the list in Virginia of what is a violent crime and what is not. We'll be right back after the spoken word this week, animal control.
Barking, cheering, money in middle, dog versus dog, police raid, protection for animals, mercy, shouting, yelling, guards in gear, cranial to concrete, correction for animals, justice, metal, penal, convict, animal, kennel, victims, man, violence, psychopathic, dog, innocent, empathic, compassion, soul, animal rescue, animal control, people in streets, protest in peace, police unleashed, dogs released, rescue, squad, no animal control, beg for mercy, people protest in athletes release for cruelty to beast, outcry for justice, man puts animal in cage, puts man in cage, dogs in a small cage, outrage, inhumane, metal cage, men inside, justified, humane, human skin, strike with violence, animal fur, stroke with kindness, humane society, commercials, images, begging for compassion, a just cause, human society, video evidence, images demanding justice. If only he were an animal.
Well, that kind of says it all, too. This is Marcello Rolando, your host of the Reasonable Voices Blog Talk Radio. My guests today, Andrea Miller and Frank Anderson. And just before we went to break, I was asking Frank, who has served time, he's done his time and certainly restored his life. What was it like, Frank, when you first came out of jail?
Well, it was thrilling, of course, to be free. And I spent the entire time not knowing exactly when I would get out. So that's another story in itself. So I didn't know I was going to go home until 3 days before they let me go.
Wait a minute. But, is that sort of normal procedure? I thought when you went to jail, the judge gave you a sentence. You knew what the time was, and maybe you got off of good behavior. But you didn't know. Why didn't you know?
Well, I was sentenced. This is kind of an unusual situation. I was sentenced under the Youthful Offender Act, and they sent me to a prison where there was another group of people who were sentenced under the same act. And although the full sentence was 4 years, which I could have served the maximum 4 years, but I was eligible for parole the entire time. So the parole board would look at my case and determine whether or not to give me parole. But I didn't know what was going to happen the whole time. So I was trying to plead my case to them, but it's not like on the Shawshank Redemption where you get, you know, sit in front of the parole board and talk to them. That wasn't the case. They just looked at my file. You may remember back in 1996 when George Allen was governor, they abolished parole in Virginia. So, but under this law, there's still about 50 guys in Virginia who are still eligible for parole, and I was fortunate enough to be in that program. But they told me I was going to go home at one point, and I had been serving 2 years and 2 months. And then the next day they said, no, you're not going to go home. So you can imagine having been incarcerated for that long and somebody to tell you you're going to go home, and then, just kidding, you're not going home. it was a very unusual situation. But then after that they reversed course again and said, you know, it's Friday, you're going home on Monday. I said, I don't believe you because you lied to me the first time. But finally they set me free.
Wow.
Being on parole is like, you have to be very careful because it's not what you do, but rather what you don't do that can get you in trouble and get you back behind bars. And that's why we have such a high recidivism rate in America. I mean, if you don't arrive, you don't make it to your visit with the parole officer, or you don't give them the drug test at the right time, there's so many things you can do that would violate parole. In D.C., if you're on parole in D.C. and you just go to the wrong neighborhood, they call it a red zone, just being there is a violation of parole. So I had to be very careful.
So you have fewer restrictions on your getting back your voting rights, but at the same time, if you're on parole, you got to watch what street you walk down.
That's right. Yeah, so, I mean, you can vote in D.C. if you're an ex-felon. You can vote where your vote doesn't count because you don't really have a representation there. But, yes, you have to be very careful and visit with the parole officer very often. And if you don't, yeah, that could be a violation. And I had 16 years hanging over my head that if I were to violate, they could have given it all back. So I was certainly on my best behavior. Now, later on, when I finally... When I applied for restoration of rights, I had been out for a number of years. You know, I was off parole in 2002. I got involved in D.C. politics and stuff around 2003. Moved back to Virginia in 2005, and that's when I started getting really involved in campaigns.
Well, even though you are the working with the Democratic Committee, you certainly have tipped your hat to Bob McDonnell for what he has done, and we know he is a Republican governor. But I don't think there's so many issues out there that we're screaming about bipartisanship and we're divided on, but they're really not about what party you believe in. And this is something that can affect anyone, just like Alzheimer's. Restoration of rights, people make mistakes, and if they have not done harm to humankind, as Andrea says, or human beings, and they pay their debt and they come out, the whole idea is that we redeem these people so that they then can make a contribution to society, which you are doing, but it's not easy. So that brings me to another point that I think we touched on a little earlier. What about the people who, number one, as Andrea mentioned, who think they have been automatically, their rights have been automatically restored because they may not, they listen with ears of hope, and I listen with, didn't he just say automatically restore on an individual basis? What does that mean? So there are people out there who think they are almost free, but there are also people out there who have been former nonviolent felons for decades. How do we even reach them? Are the records that good? Frank, you implied they're not even looking for you. You have to look for them. Let's talk about that. Andrew, do you have any thoughts? Go ahead, Frank. That's okay.
Well, I think Andrew could speak to that better. Go ahead, Andrew.
Basically what I was going to say is there is no complete list that anyone has of everyone who has ever been convicted of Virginia, of a felony in Virginia that is still in Virginia. So the onus on getting your rights restored are still on you, the individual, to somehow know what the current process is. And again, as Frank mentioned, that is of itself a huge problem. You have a process that is constantly shifting. So if we get a Democratic governor, they might change it to one thing. When we get another Republican governor, they could change it to something else simply because they want to. There are no rules in Virginia. The governor is the god of voting. They can make up any rule that they want as long as they are not violating any federal statutes.
Without even going to the General Assembly?
Correct. They do not need to ask anyone. It is 100% their call.
There's a distinction to be made here because Democrats in the General Assembly have been pushing for automatic restoration of rights for many years and trying to get a constitutional amendment passed. And only recently have the Republicans gotten on board. But the Constitution of Virginia gives the governor broad powers to restore rights, as Andrea was saying. But there's a disagreement among among the two sides as to what power that gives them. We believe that the governor can issue an automatic restoration of rights that's not individual, one that applies to everybody in Virginia or to whatever group that he wants it to. In fact, this has been done in other states. Iowa and Florida both changed it, and they made their process automatic. But then in 2010, another governor was elected, and they reversed it. So they can do that. So we think that Governor McDonald could, if he wanted to, issue an automatic restoration of rights that really is automatic to everybody who had a nonviolent felony conviction. But they think that you have to do it on an individual basis and that their hands are tied and that this is the only way they can do it.
Now, playing the devil's advocate for a moment, it's a little difficult to find that position, but I'm going to try. Is there any justification whatsoever in saying, even after someone who has done his time, saying, well, we need to, we can't just say everybody's an American citizen again. We have to find out, I can't even say the words. We have to find out whether they deserve it or not. We have to find out if somehow prison didn't change them for the better. Is there any, even the thinnest ice to stand on for position of, except that, of course, legally, the Virginia Constitution says he can. But as Frank, I think, is implying, at least, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Frank, but if he wanted to, it's, as Andrea says, it's totally within the governor's power. He could wave the wand and say, okay, if you, you've served your time, you've paid your court costs, and you're not a violent felon, you are now automatically restored to full citizenship. But instead, we're going to change the definition of what's violent and what's nonviolent.
Hmm. Well, I don't think that there is really.
Well, go ahead, Frank, and then I'm next, and I've got a huge objection to something. So, Frank, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I don't think that people have a leg to stand on by saying that for any reason we should make it even harder for people to get their rights back once you've served your time. And it goes to a larger question, I think. The question is, what are the requirements of citizenship? You know, if you have served your sentence and the judge has said you need to serve time and do all this and that, and you have, and you can get a driver's license, you can raise children, and you can do all these things, but you can't vote, then what else does someone need to do? I mean, in essence, those who are disagreeing are saying that you disagree with the sentence. You disagree with the judge's sentence because you think that it should have been more harsh. So what more would somebody have to do? But I've been hearing from both sides of the issue and some folks saying, well, if you broke the laws, you shouldn't be allowed to help make the laws. But again, I don't think that's a valid argument.
Well, my whole objection is completely to this violent, nonviolent. Number one, we already know that Virginia loves claiming crimes are violent when there is absolutely, positively no violence that was involved. And even if there was, this is about your right to vote. When you leave prison, if you are lucky enough to find employment, you are going to have to pay taxes. And you are going to have to pay taxes whether you have the right to vote or not. You don't get to tell the IRS or the Commonwealth of Virginia, you know what, I don't have the right to vote, therefore I should not have to pay taxes, because that would be taxation without representation, which is a really core component of which this country was founded on. So in my mind, this is absolutely ridiculous. And again, as Frank said, we have a judicial branch of our government, and the judicial branch makes a decision based upon this is a crime you committed under these circumstances, and we have determined that your punishment should be X, and it should consist of A, B, C, and D. they didn't throw in a whole bunch of extra stuff. So once you've done A, B, C, and D, that's it. That's one of the reasons why I really like H.R. 12 and S-123, the Voter Empowerment Act. One of the things that is in that very, very, very big omnibus bill is that your voting rights are restored. Now, again, this is federal legislation. Your voting rights are restored in federal elections upon release from prison. There is nothing about paying fines or anything else. Because one of the problems with fines is we are now seeing in certain for-profit prisons that they are charging people so much per day for their prison stay. And in some prisons, it would be cheaper to go and spend 3 years at the Marriott. So these fines are simply being used as a way to prevent people from being able to get their civil rights back. We
have to be very careful
about falling into these traps.
Yes, I've had interviews with people discussing the private prison situation, but I didn't think of it about in today's discussion, so I'm glad you brought it up, Andrea. So what you're saying is, while it's not law yet, there are at least two bills before the U.S. Congress that, if passed, would say, okay, it's for federal elections at least, you are automatically restored to full citizenship after you get out of prison if these two bills are passed into law by the federal government, signed into law, rather, by the president.
Right.
But I'm with you now. I'm even more upset than I was at the beginning. I hadn't thought about this either, and I'm only repeating because I sometimes repetition is the greatest teacher for whoever's listening and all those they tell. You get out of prison, at least in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and you don't have your rights automatically restored, regardless of what the current AG and governor says. And then you, while not having full citizenship rights, including who voting for who represents you, you have to pay that same government tax.
Yes.
I think that burns. It really burns me in the wrong place. There's nothing good to be said about that.
Absolutely not.
You know, Well, Frank, do you have any parting words for us? Give us a little sense of hope since you have made it and you are a beacon to help others to make it. We're running out of time, but I'd like to try and end on something of a hopeful note. Go for it.
I'll just say that persistence pays off. If you talk to the right people and plead your case and reach out to folks, organizations like the Advancement Project and the PDA and all these groups who are out here willing to help, you know, we can do everything we can to get your rights restored. And for me, it was a really, really good feeling when I finally got that letter from the governor with the gold seal on it. It was one of the best days of my life, so certainly worth working for.
Are you, again, you and Andrea, we all know that perhaps the very first stumbling block is that nobody says to you at the prison on your last day, call this number, or go to this website, and they will help you get your rights restored. So since we know that world doesn't exist, at least not in Virginia, how, supposing you, first of all, not an internet literate person, not everybody knows about online stuff. Where is some central place? I know we've given the website, but who do you go to, Frank? Is it you? Who do you call to say, where do I begin? Frank?
There is, actually, there's a phone number that the Advancement Project has set up, and it's 1-855-LET-VOTE. And that number, they're going to be taking down the information of folks who need to get their rights restored. And this will create a case individual file for everybody, every person who is seeking that, no matter what their situation is.
Could you give that number one more time for us, Frank?
1-855-LET-VOTE.
And that's the number for the, what's the organization again?
That is the Advancement Project, and they've been doing some great work on the issue.
Now, Advancement Project, Andrea, that's one of the things you're working with, I know, to get the restoration of rights accomplished for former nonviolent felons. Can in the little bit of time we have left, for
everyone with a felony conviction in their past, we do not distinguish between violent and nonviolent.
You paid the state what you owe, and you did the time, and now
you deserve your full restoration of your civil rights.
Well, that sounds to me like the right number to call to at least get started and say, here I am, I don't know what to do, can you help me? Okay.
Yes.
Well, this has been a roller coaster ride. I thought I was going to come into this interview and not be shocked or depressed. As I said, the more I've read about it and the more conversations I've had, the more depressing it is. But I think we all of us out there listening, we got to get past the depression and find people who need this help. Give them the telephone number. I'll have Andrea give it one more time in a bit. Give them the telephone number.
Oh, no, you're going to have Frank give it. I don't know that number.
Oh, okay. And get them started on the road, and then pick up your phone and call anybody you can get a hold of in the Richmond government. That includes the General Assembly, that includes the governor's office, the state attorney general's office, and if enough people call, don't just email, call, go visit. You know, go knock on their door and let them know that you've heard about this, because there are too many people we know. It's like the Equal Rights Amendment and Alzheimer's. Everybody knows somebody. If you know any woman in Virginia, you know, or in the country, you know there you know someone who is not benefiting from the Equal Rights Amendment. If you know older people suffering from Alzheimer's, well, here we are. This is another category. It's not about politics, even though it's been made about politics. There are no Republicans and Democrats in this. Everybody knows somebody who has made a mistake in their life, and they've paid for that mistake, and now all they're asking is for an equal chance for the same thing the rest of us have. And fortunately, there are a couple of states up northeast, Vermont and New Hampshire, that recognize that. We need to get Virginia and Florida and Kentucky. And what was the other one, Andrea?
Iowa.
Iowa, yes. To see what, you know, what it means to be free. And just say you're the land of the free. Okay. That's enough for me. Frank, one more time that telephone number, if you don't mind, before we go.
It's 1-855-LET-VOTE. Or 538-8683.
Thank you so much, Frank Anderson and Andrea Miller, for being on The Reasonable Voices today. My thanks, as always, to our technical director here, Bernard Hankins. He's also the composer and creator of The Spoken Word, and we're going to go out on that now. It has been a provocative, disturbing, uplifting, hopeful, it's been a conversation we need to do something about. Thank you again, everyone, and so long for today. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
No strings attached, no looking back. A new man is what you looking at, giving up everything.
Hey, yo, I got something to say. I need y'all to listen, which is what doesn't happen for most politicians. Yo, I spit thorough raps. Yo, where's my burrow at? I'm fed up with the federal government bureaucrats. Yo, don't need no stethoscope to hear they talking muddles. This is progress. The Frederick Douglass freedom struggle. So they stack their next million. I need some neck healing. I speak truth, raise the roof while they raise the debt ceiling.
Whoa.